After all this, you still...
I still want that gas, yes. And you had better deliver.
Welcome back to The Greenhouse, dear listeners. It's me and Josh with a current affairs lineup here today. I guess before we start, it kind of goes without saying. Things have been crazy, to say the least, lately, haven't they?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we are... you know, it's something that I think, especially, you know, with like Israel-Palestine and like the escalation of things recently, it's something that we've endured a lot in our life. Like, right, yeah. You know, it's just something that's it's come up a ton of times. But I think I don't know. This time it's been especially loud and craven and just like bloodthirsty from, you know, kind of people kind of on all sides of it. But I mean, you're kind of getting this sense of like it, and I've seen this comparison as well, where it feels like this is what would happen like post 9/11 if we had social media.
Yeah, yeah, that sense is brought up a lot by observers, and this is kind of what I was getting at in I think a prior episode, right, where the way Russia and Ukraine has kind of become passive entertainment for a certain kind of political observer. I know that they might not be the majority, but they're certainly a vocal minority of a sort, right? And I'd say the same cohort is approaching this recent wave of violence with the same lens. And I'd just say that, like, you know, if for us observing, you know, comfortably as Americans on the internet, it's been exceptionally bad, the climate on social media, how people are talking about this, especially people making excuses for the occupation and for Israel, right? And there's been a lot mm-hmm. of interesting coverage coming out of the area. I'm not necessarily going to say we're the best people to you know, to comment on events there. There's good coverage coming out. But what I will say is, these events played out not too long after we recorded our episode about Kevin McCarthy getting ousted from the speaker role.
Yeah.
And seeing how this has played out as Congress is now in recess, right? I don't think they're back until the 17th, right?
Yeah, so they reset. They were in session for a little bit this past week trying to come up with a speaker. It wasn't Scalise. It wasn't, and you know, right now it's like, you know, could be Jim Jordan, but it's looking like there's going to be a lot of internal opposition to him within their caucus. So it very likely won't be him either.
Exactly. And like, that's the thing, like these two, it's been fascinating to see how the backdrop of events in Palestine have inserted themselves into the House Speaker race. As we'll see in some of the stuff we're going to get into today. But Josh, I just did want to shout out what you said in the Discord earlier, because like, it sums up my thoughts perfectly on this, right? Which is, yeah, Israel and Palestine has been America's favorite blood sport, but these past few days has just been the worst I've ever seen the spectating of it.
Yeah, like it's, you know, it... And it's weird because, like, I mean, I guess, you know, this particular Hamas attack, right? I mean, I think, you know, it
I mean, they caught the IDF with their pants down. That's kind of what happened. And it's,
well, and, you know, it might have been a willful dropping of the pants, right? Like,
it's, as
you
know, statements from Netanyahu indicate, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, not to, like, completely make light of it, right? But, I mean, it is, you know, it is, like, kind of, you know, like, you wink at your fellow prisoner when you drop the soap. And, you know, it does feel like this is willful and culpable. And I mean, the Israeli public has been perhaps more loudly in opposition to him than, you know, you would expect with like this type of attack. And certainly more than the American public as a whole. Right. I mean, it's really bizarre just how the circumstance has always been that like the Israeli population has seemed to be more ironically more, you know, in favor of ending the occupation and all that stuff than the American public certainly is. And I think it's really tragic that, like, it's, you know, this is, as I said, when I say it's like our favorite blood sport, it's because we've always reveled in the escalation of it. Like, it's,
yeah,
you know, the Israeli government and Hamas as an organization too, right? I mean, this is a situation where, like, you know, not to like both sides it, right? But it's like the people who are like empowered in on either side are the villains here, right? And they're escalating a situation where you're getting all kinds of violence. You know, obviously there's the attack directly itself, which was at, you know, sort of like this music rave. So, like, you know, slaughter of, you know, innocents, children, in a lot of cases, and, you know, what we've been seeing in retaliation against Gaza. And it seems like, you know, for as much as I can probably generally criticize Biden's role or lack thereof in this, I would say it's maybe marginally better than past presidents, because he at least seems to have encouraged a little bit of de-escalation, in the sense that they are apparently reinstating water access for the Gaza public, which, again, like, the idea that you have, you know, a whole country that can just say we can deny supposedly a separate country access to all, like, you know, basic necessities of life, power, water, all of these things, really should be a big wake-up call if you're already, you know, aren't aware of the power dynamics at play there.
Yeah, and I think it's been very indicative of a lot of people who present themselves as alleged experts or qualified observers in political affairs really showing their ass, and a lot of people, you know, really showing their ass with "this is the first I'm hearing of this" kind of takes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I would also just, like, suffice it to say that, like, a lot of people are doing the thing where they've decided to take weird defenses of settler colonialism as, like, progressive takes because they back themselves into a corner on the internet. But I think, like, it just goes back to everything we say here on the show, which is, like, accepting that there's a degree of complexity, especially in cases where so much human suffering, so much misery is perpetuated.
Yeah.
Is probably the smart move, if not the ethical one. But that's neither here nor there. I will say that, you know, what we can do today is comment on how these events are playing out here in the U.S. And observing what's going on in Congress with this may yield some fruit. Speaking of fruit, George Santos.
Well, I did want to go back to the Israel-Palestine real quick. I think one of the tragedies, you know, with this is I think that we've allowed to see this conflict sort of manifest itself stateside in other countries and whatnot as well. And, you know, to the extent that we have any influence, right? I mean, just, like, remain compassionate for people, right? Like, across, like, you know, obviously Muslims are being particularly persecuted because of, you know, the relation to Palestine, but also, you know, Jews and whatnot as well. I mean, I've seen a lot of really heavy anti-Semitism. And I think, you know, maybe the amount of it on the left is being outsized in the way it's being criticized on the media, right? I don't think it's necessarily as, you know, it's just there, but, I mean, you're seeing it on both sides.
But there is,
I think,
that, like, right-wing brand of, like, opposition to war, not as, like, a humanitarian position, but as a, you know, like an isolationist type of view, right?
Sure.
And their criticism of Zionism is one that's thoroughly rooted in anti-Semitism more than it is, you know, one against settler colonialism, one against, you know, mistreatment of human rights. And that's
100%. And gosh, I mean, I've seen so many, like, just bizarre takes as well, where, like, I mean, and I think another thing to, like, emphasize too, right, is, like, Hamas is not, like, a liberatory organization that I've seen people sort of argue that it is. Like, I mean, you're not, like, to the extent that you have any common goals with them is maybe, and I say this, like, very hesitantly, maybe a free Palestine, but I'm not even necessarily convinced that's what they want, especially in the sense that they've been, you know, used as, you know, like, essentially partnered with Israel and sort of...
I mean, yeah, they're a useful, like, tool for Israel to, like, prop themselves up against, like, a necessary enemy. And
yeah, and, like,
cooperate in that regard sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, and essentially to, like, kind of, you know, force the sort of, you know, the one state solution and whatnot, as opposed to, you know, it could not, you know, allowing a separation between the two and whatnot. But, I mean, and it's just, like, you know, it kind of ties into, like, the Ukraine stuff as well, but I've seen, like, weird things where it's just, like, and I think this is just going to happen with every type of conflict we have going forward, where it's just, like, where you side on the culture war is going to determine your, like, sort of performative allegiances to. Because yes. I saw there was the one yes. thing from, like, Andrew Tate where he was just like, well, I'm pro-Hamas because they're anti-vax. And it's like, what the fuck?
Like, well, and I mean, because that's how we've seen, like, the, again, not to comment on Ukraine and Russia again, it's like my least favorite thing, but the way we've seen that play out in the Republican caucus, right, where it's like the opposition to the war is one solely based on, like, culture war resentments or the fact that Biden is the one who's supporting it and not like, oh, this is a quagmire we should probably not get involved with. They're not arguing for that position at all.
Yeah, and it's like a completely, like, unprincipled, like, advocacy for it, right? Like, it's just, or advocacy against it, right? And, like, that's the thing where, like, I think it, like, you're seeing a little bit, too, with, like, the discussion about, like, the FBI, where, like, Republicans have said that, you know, essentially that, like, you know, oh, yeah, we should defund the FBI, and, like, some leftists jumping on that, because they're like, oh, yeah, sick, like, let's get rid of that, but it's like, they only want to defund the FBI because they're prosecuting Trump, and, like, their other members and stuff like that. I did think it was also particularly disgusting on the state side response to this, where we had McDaniel, former Ronna Romney McDaniel, but, you know, she dropped the last name because of you know, unfortunate ties to a certain Mitt Romney. But she was like, oh, this provides a real opportunity for our candidates. And there was brief talks after McCarthy had already said he was dropping out of the speaker race that, like, oh, he should just become speaker again to, like, sort of stabilize the country so we can properly aid Israel. Like, this is just insane to me that, like, they use, like, the deaths of human, and, like, they don't give a shit about this stuff. I mean, they barely give a crap about it in, like, the Israeli government too, right? I mean, there was one thing I saw where, like, Secretary Blinken was, like, he met with, like, victims of the attack, and, like, Netanyahu still hasn't, like, in his own fucking country. And it's like, and you get, like, the same sense from, like, these folks as well, dissent, and, like, you've been seeing, like, just the increasingly, like, this race to just say the most, like, deplorable shit imaginable, right? DeSantis was like, oh, we shouldn't accept a single Palestinian refugee after they were being, like, told to, like, you know, evacuate the Gaza Strip. You know, a population of 2 million, just, you know, get the fuck out of there. And, like, you know, Lindsey Graham on there, like, calling for, like, holy war, calling for, like, escalation of conflict with Iran, even if there's zero evidence. Like, he literally was asked, even if there's no evidence, do you still support this, that they're connected to? And he said, yeah, absolutely. So you're getting, like, all of that kind of, like, post 9/11, like, just Islamophobia, like,
war of civilizations bullshit. Exactly.
Yeah, like, you know, Biden's a pussy because he won't, you know, just, like, call for the extinction of the entire Muslim race or whatever. And it's like all just, like, just the most barbaric stuff imaginable.
Exactly. And, like, that's it's the aggravating reality of being in, you know, our perspective of things, right? Where it's like, to explain what just happened, it's going to take us 30 minutes to catch people up on history. Yeah. I don't necessarily think of it as both sidesing, but, like, you have to, like, catch people up with all the different factions involved. And then particularly not even as, like, a, you know, as an endorsement or criticism, but just, like, you have to disclose your own opinion of all the factions involved.
Yeah.
To disclose your bias, right? And then it's just like, you don't, I mean, that's the luxury that mainstream forces, you know, get away with, is they can just paint easy narratives, justify bloodshed, and then, you know, wipe their hands of it, and you get whatever rubes to believe what they need to. But then, like, to build real consciousness, to build like a real sense of reckoning. I mean, you're asking people to confront a lot of information and then force them to ask hard questions of themselves and the things they're facing. An American political discourse as currently structured, I don't think can facilitate that. And I think, you know, spaces like Twitter, especially as they've taken their right wing turn, have exacerbated that mentality, that approach.
Well, I forgot to even mention that. Yeah. Elon's getting, I don't know if they actually followed through with it, because they there was a ton of just like misinformation and like just like really disturbing things shared on Twitter in relation to all of this. And
yeah, because the like EU, there's just like a
the
rush.
EU is threatening to like sue him until if he doesn't fix it.
And that's the thing, right, is like these surges of disinformation are just like really graphic scenes from a conflict, yeah, often with like very little context, no translation, no like, you know, editorial assistance on how to process what you just read. I mean, this was a mainstay of like early Russia-Ukraine conflict stuff.
Yeah.
People just posting battlefield footage, and it's like, what am I supposed to make of this as like a civilian?
Oh, and I think it's been substantially worse here, because, you know, one of the other things that stands out is like you've had all these like celebrities like sharing photos of like, oh man, standing with the Israeli public, like look at like, you know, the horrors that they're living through. And it's like pictures of Palestine and Palestinians. Like, and the response is just to like delete it, not to like, you know, reckon with the fact that like maybe their perception of the situation is, you know, lacking in the appropriate level of nuance or what have you, or just, you know, lacking that background information, right? I mean, it's, you know, as you said, like, it's, there's so much to unpack if we were to really, like, you know, delve into it, which I don't think we're going to so much today. But, like, you know, I think that, you know, the morality of the conflict isn't really that complicated, right? I mean,
the late Michael Brooks said, it's not complicated.
Yeah, it's not complicated, but I think the solution to it is the part that's more complicated, right? Like, that's, you know, if it was easy, one would think we would have already solved it, right? Or at least, you know, made an attempt. But I think that's really been the struggle, right? And I think some people are just like looking for easy answers for how we fix this, where there aren't necessarily any. I mean, I think at the very least, right, you know, I mean, we can probably agree that, like, you know, just, you know, carpet bombing, you know, the Gaza Strip is probably not for, you know, not in most, you know, well-intentioned humans' best interest. I can't exactly say it's in no one's best interest, because we are dealing with some, you know, really unsavory elements here. But, you know, it's the path to building like lasting peace, and like, yeah, and Palestine hasn't had like really a functioning government in, you know, however long. You know, a lot of people point to like, well, they elected Hamas, and it's like Hamas
just filled a vacuum. Let's be honest.
And that's more or less. And like, one of the things I found like really shocking about this that I didn't know about before, but like the median age in Palestine is like 19.
I'd say, the
voting age is 34.
Right. The sheer plurality of Palestinian citizens are children.
Yeah.
And the overwhelming majority of the population, like, I don't know if it was 50% or higher, like, is formally diagnosed with clinical depression. You know, it's just like,
mm-hmm,
it is one of the most severely immiserated populations we could study on the planet, right? And the way that they are simultaneously depicted as, you know, hapless, bumbling idiots who can't govern themselves, as well as dastardly, conniving, you know, agents of chaos who are trying to destabilize Israel. It's the kind of invention of fiction you have to contrive to get away with what you're doing. And it cannot be said more clearly that This happens with the explicit consent of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
We fund this, we provide weapons, and the United States profits from this. Yours and mine, your and my tax dollars go to this. And that's why, like, I think every American should not be afraid to speak on this. I think if of any international conflict, any American citizen is qualified to speak on, this is the one to pick. And it's very easy to pick who you stand with here.
Yeah.
And still people find a way to show their ass. Speaking of showing their ass, George Santos.
Yeah, you know, this is a conflict close to home for him, right? As a Jewish member
Dear
of Congress.
Fucking God. Well, I mean, so there's a lot to unpack with the George Santos stuff. One of the elements of this, mind you, is, I mean, okay, like, George Santos probably had the craziest 72-hour run on the Twitter's news cycle I've ever seen, where he starts a beef with Steve Scalise, of all people.
Well, before that, a new set of indictments came out. Conspiracy, wire fraud, false statements, falsification of records, aggravated identity theft. What is aggravated identity theft?
That's what we're trying to look at. Because I was talking to my partner about this, and it's like, was it because he lied about, like, things that happened in his past that contribute that? Or is it because he stole identity data from campaign contributors?
It could be both.
That is not clear to me.
But yeah, he did, like, a credit card fraud screen. This is, I guess, it'll be right before he was in office. Just frauding credit cards. So there's a bunch more indictments out against him, right? And there was already several things there. And then he decides to start beef with Steve Scalise. This is when Steve Scalise is, as you mentioned, he was still the speaker presumptive candidate, right? He had won the caucus
and
vote.
He was also House Majority Leader, right?
Yes, yes. So he was sort of naturally next in line if something were to happen to McCarthy, such as, you know, being humiliated on the floor. So he posts, this is on October 11th, 2023, George Santos posts, "It's just past 9:40 p.m., and I have yet to hear from the speaker designate. So I've made my decision, and after 10 months and having had zero contact or outreach from him, I've come to the conclusion that my vote doesn't matter to him. I'm now declaring I'm in anyone but Scalise. And come hell or high water, I won't change my mind. We need a speaker that leads by including every single member of the team, not just some. That's not leadership. Hashtag Speaker of the House."
And just to be clear, this was a completely unprovoked beef. Like, this was probably to get himself back in the spotlight, or worse.
Well, he was already in the spotlight.
Well, I mean yeah, to deflect from, like, the indictments. And I'm pretty sure, like, I don't know. My initial theory earlier this year is, like, I think Kevin McCarthy made a deal with George Santos to, like, can you just get yourself into controversy every now and then? Just to, like, take the heat. And I feel like this is definitely a way to, like, deflect from the shit show of, like, the McCarthy removal of, like, oh, by the way, there is caucus bad behavior, but it's just one guy. I don't know if that strategy is going to pay off, and this is just me speculating.
Well, I mean, at this point, it can't, right? Like, there's no way you can convince anyone of that after seeing, like, just how this caucus has... I mean, and, like, the fact that we're starting to get, like, non-anonymous reports, I think is the biggest indictment on their caucus right now.
Right. Like, everybody's snitching. But also, like, if you look at, like, the picks for who was in the running, right? I mean, you had Scalise versus Jim Jordan. We've already talked about Jim Jordan's sordid career. Scalise himself, you know, I mean, I don't know. You never see Republicans from Louisiana ever leading the party, but even Scalise himself is, like, he's made a lot of bad moves with, like, just repeated racist gaffes, one of which being, like, he showed up at a white nationalist, like, event and spoke there.
You know, as one does occasionally.
As one does. It's just, mon ami, you had you down that event right there. You end up in the white nationalist event. You got to give you that speech. Oh, yes, sir. But, oh, God, it's just, it's, you could have so many principled reasons not to support this guy. And instead, you were like, well, I got to get this indictment shit off of people's minds. And also, like, Santos's Twitter.
Well, and his reasoning, right, is just that, like, oh, well, he won't, like, he hasn't, like, reached out personally to me. Like, he's got, like, you know, 200 members
some
of the
freshman
caucus.
Freshman congressman from New York didn't get reached out to. Who gives a shit? Like,
yeah, like, it's just crazy.
Well, and also, like, Santos has been, like, really trying to deflect from the indictments. Like, you know how, like, again, not to bring up the Israel-Palestine stuff, but, like, he's been retweeting all of these, like, supposed war crimes almost exclusively on his feed right now.
Oh, I haven't looked a ton at his direct feed.
I try not to, but I just, like, I was just looking through. I'm like, oh, this is almost exclusively. And then, like, oh, and then the whole, like, global day of jihad hoax. He's really big on that today.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
He's really big on that today. But,
well,
yeah.
The day is over. The day of jihad never came.
Nothing happened. Nothing happened, folks. As of 2:32 Eastern time, nothing happened. And then there's just been, like, a bunch of weird shit going on, too, where, like, there's a clip of him walking through the Capitol building, and he is confronted by...
Well, no. Before that, he's walking around with this baby.
Yes. That event is weird. And someone asks, is this your baby? And he says, not yet.
Yes. Yeah, like, what is, like, I mean, like, I don't know if that's just, like, a, you know, cutesy, like, you know, like, oh, you know, I'd just love to have this baby or whatever, or if that's just, like, but, like, from him, it just comes across as, like, inherently creepy. Then you get this, like, episode with him with, I don't know if this guy's a member, someone from his district, but it's a Jewish American. You can kind of unload this if you want.
Yeah, I mean, I got the clip pulled up right here. I don't know if the audio is going to come in. The name's also sending me because the guy says his name is Shab Singh. I'm like, that is an Indian person's name.
Yeah. That's what I thought, too. I was like, that doesn't sound that Jewish, but...
But yeah, this is a Jewish American who's critical of Israeli policies, comes to protest him in the house, and is basically calling him out on, like... In addition to all, like, the bad takes he's had on current affairs, just him lying about being Jewish. And that scandal came and went at the start of the year, right? But that was just...
Well, there was just so many scandals he had all at once. Like, it was hard for anything to, like, be the focal point.
Exactly. And I think that's the thing with Santos, right? Is that it's just, like, if it's like if a man had multiple fingers in pots and they were all like concurrent scandals, and between like the indictments, which, by the way, that's like he's tied with Trump for how much shit he got indicted for.
Yeah, pretty close. Yeah. This most recent batch was 23 different indictments. And like you don't have like the weird like, well, this is a former president. Like, can we really indict him? Stuff like that. There's like no. I mean, like we've indicted, we've convicted. Members of Congress have spent time in jail. Like, there's plenty of like precedent. It's not shocking in the slightest to like throw a member in jail. You know, usually they're not like in office when they're in jail, but that's usually because they have like the decency to resign or you know Congress expels them. But yeah, like it's, you know, it's not like, and not that I'm like necessarily defending those arguments against like the Trump indictment, right? I mean, I personally find them preposterous as well. But, you know, I understand at least like what they're getting at with like, you know, like isn't this like,
I mean, it's like, yeah, a president has never formally been charged like that before.
Yeah.
Until the shit with Trump has really been going down. But then, yeah, yes. members of Congress, you get caught with one bribe.
Well, usually it's more than that.
Oh my god, we should probably do like a congressionally indicted members like series. There's probably some.
Oh yeah, I mean I have plenty of data. I just have to create I would have to go through a code of it, but I've got like from every member through the 93rd Congress, so that's like the 70s. If they went to prison. It is listed there. Unless I missed someone, but yeah, I've got a lot.
There's definitely some meat on that bone, for sure.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, I just... Everything about Santos has remained enigmatic and mysterious, whether it's, like, him having, like, a drag career in Brazil, to, like, nondescript, always changing like backstory in New York, to like these weird video appearances of him as like a gay conservative in like 2014, to like
wasn't he like married to a woman at one point too?
This is news to me.
Thought that was something, because that was like the thing when like his like claim about like when he was like running like as like, oh, I'm a gay Republican, and then they like found out that like, oh, like he like had lived a relatively straight life. And then there was that one thing where there was that joke that he like hard launched like his current husband with, like when they were like, oh, like we're sad to hear, like me and my husband and I are sad to hear about like Feinstein's death or whatever.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that was just such a minor
Here we go. He did hard launch his husband, and then for those wondering and going nuts, this is Matt, my husband, since November 2021. Picture taken November 2021.
Why does that guy look like he could be his son?
That could be an intern for all I know.
I mean, yeah, it does just look like a sapper. Like, he's lanyard and everything.
Yeah, is that Kevin McCarthy in the background?
Yeah, that's Kevin McCarthy right
there. That is, wow.
Kevin McCarthy photo bombing that.
Amazing. Oh man. Just the more questions you ask about George Santos, the less answers you get.
Yeah, it's because it's like, and like the more you get, like it's like you just find like this deeper well of lies. Like holy cow! Look at like, just look at his Wikipedia page for a one-term congressman. He has like just a man. I've seen members who've served for like 30 years.
Not even like a paragraph on them. Exactly. Oh, confessed to committing check fraud in Brazil in 2008, but failed to appear in courts, leaving the case unresolved. In the wake of his election, Brazilian authorities revived the case in late 2022, later agreed to plead guilty. Dog.
But yeah, like just scroll down. Like, look at this.
This is what? Whoa! What?
Yeah.
Oh, this is like a.
You got like a million. Like,
you got an 18 section Wikipedia article on this guy.
Yeah, like just wild.
Oh my god! There's the booking photo. Also, it's similar, like politicians who have been like who have lied about their backgrounds. This is crazy.
Yeah.
This is crazy. Okay, yeah, Santos did not widely acknowledge his marriage to the woman, a Brazilian national, until it was reported in 2022. That month, he told the New York Post. And that rag did print that. Oh my god. I dated women in the past. I married a woman. Adding that he was okay with his own sexuality. People change. Records show that a filing to dissolve the marriage in 2013 was withdrawn the same year. 4 months later, he filed an immigration petition on his wife's behalf, approved in 2014, typically seen as a sign that INS believed the marriage was valid.
So wait, he married this woman so he could bring an immigrant into this country?
I mean,
what is this?
I mean, he did the Trump thing, right? I don't care. I'm loose about immigration, but they're the ones with the hang up and they do this shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
Oh God. Yeah, no, this would have to be like a 50 part investigative series if you wanted us to cover this.
It's insane.
Yeah, it just came to a head though, because like I think right before all this too, wasn't he trying to pick a beef with Jamal Bowman over like him allegedly like pulling the fire alarm?
Well, I mean, him and like 90% of the Republican caucus. So, you know, it wasn't unique over that case. But yeah, like, I mean, and it was funny where like a lot of them were, because he pulled that fire alarm during the continuing resolution vote. He claims it was because he was confused by the sign on the door, which says pull alarm to open door. I think it was clearly meant to like be like, oh, the alarm will go off if you open this door. But instead, he pulled the alarm to open it. But anyway, so like they accused him of like, you know, trying to like get him obstruct votes and like people comparing it to like January 6th and whatnot, which, again, it's just like everything to them is like, oh, this is basically like January 6th, except the Democrats did it. And it's nothing like January 6th, like any of those times. But whatever.
I didn't really pay attention to that because that was happening at like the same time as like the Fetterman dress code nonsense, where it's like, this seems like such a non-issue. It's like, and to be completely honest, if I was in one of those votes, I would pull a fire alarm if I was a member of Congress, just disclosing that. And guess what? I've also just been in those situations, like especially like federal buildings or any government building.
Sure.
They're so weird. They're all laid out weird. And like, there's just like a bunch of weird like gateways and like weird glass doors that never add up right. So I believe either explanation. I would have definitely pulled it for a vote.
Well, and it's like either way, it's like he voted on it. So like, I mean, clearly it wasn't to like, I mean, there was that like the conspiracy angle was that like McCarthy gave them no time to read the bill. So like they're like, oh, they were trying to delay it or whatever. But again, it's like, and I talked about this in my class, and I was like, I'm pretty sure like McCarthy's strategy was basically just, you know, like I think he was just kind of like leave the Dems in the dark, just trust that they'll do like in what in his mind is the right thing, and he'll be fine. And clearly, that strategy didn't exactly work out for him.
It did not. All I'm saying, though,
man,
is...
this report from Politico on George Santos right now. Okay. George Santos has less than 23,000 in his campaign account after refunds and reports that he didn't disclose previously.
Oh, that is
23,000 is pretty much unelectable too. If it ever like actually came down to him having a shot at re-election.
Oh boy.
He also, there was that brief period where he had beef with Romney too, because Romney yelled at him during the State of the Union, or scolded him because he said you should be in the back, and he's like, he wants to, you know, put a gay man in the back of the house.
No, but you, even then, it's just I don't know. You sometimes wonder, like, is this guy up to something nefarious with all this shit he's up to? And then sometimes you just have to think, like, no, this guy just is a pathological liar and did it for, like, the most mundane reasons.
Oh, yeah.
But it's crazy. I just... The reason why we bring Santos up is because that weird claim of his about having Jewish identity earlier this year, you know, was like a sticking point until it wasn't, because just so much shit happened in the year that like this story got left behind. But no one ever checked him on it. No one ever decided to look into it, or no one decided to interview like, okay, what part of Europe? And if you do like do the investigation, it's like, huh, coming to South America from Germany after World War II sure raises a couple questions if you ask me. But it's like, yeah, like he made
a little sus.
It's like, again, like he made that claim, like trying to make an appeal to like the pro-Israel lobby and saying that like, I am Jewish, I'll do what it takes. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, like, you know, that money was readily given to him, and the fact that he was able to make that lie unchecked, yeah, it's starting to blow up into his face because someone decided to rightfully confront him about it. But it's going to be like only one piece of the Jenga tower that is this guy's lies.
100%, yeah.
And it's going to collapse, and he's still going to be smirking at and smizing at us.
I don't even know what the visual of his Jenga tower would look like. I mean, this is that thing's being held together by like a miracle.
It's held together by lies and more lies. That's all I can think. Okay. Let's head to our next round.
Oh, I guess one little thing I'll add on kind of the speaker stuff and whatnot too. This was like sort of a controversy that I saw someone talk about that's kind of weird. So Jim Jordan is like currently the sort of like speaker candidate in the sense that like he's, you know, the one that the caucus has voted on, but there seems to be a ton of holdouts. Some of it seems to be just kind of rooted not so much in the fact that he, you know, tried to, you know, support an insurrection and coup attempt, but like some of it's just that he was like really petty, and like some of it seems to be based in pettiness, like where he was just like, oh, like you know, like I guess he like said something kind of like mean to Scalise during the first vote, which is like whatever. But someone pointed out that he's been in Congress for 16 years and he has not passed a single law that he has sponsored.
Well, I mean, a guy like that, you know what you're good for. You're there to gum up the works. You're not there to be an effective legislator, right?
I mean, that's true, but like, I mean, 16 years and nothing?
Not even one cosign, not even...
He has some non-binding resolutions that passed the House, including like the creation of like his little, you know, weaponization of against the, you know, of the federal government committee thing. But it's just like really weird that I get that, like, you know, his job is to sort of gum up the works and whatnot, but like you'd think that there's like more you could do. Like, especially with like, you know, they have like policy positions. I mean, yeah, they're crappy policy positions, but like they do require the passage of laws. Or at least, you know, the attempt to, you know, get them. But like, and that's the thing too, is like they haven't even like passed like both chambers. Is like the thing too. It's like not like, like that's the level of ineffectiveness we're talking about.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because again, like, this guy is like a major member of the Republican caucus. I'd say he's not the most senior, but he's like, he's the, again, to be on the judicial,
he's been very high profile since the Trump years.
Since the Trump years, he's been very high profile. Again, the whole Ohio State wrestling program debacle, like, he was able to like sweat that off. The whole January 6th business, he was able to sweat that off. The relationship to Trump, I mean, let's face it, that was you know, that only got him some more popularity within the party. But you know, this guy's like, yeah, I think he's just high profile, but like you said, like, it's all style and no substance. So it kind of just makes you wonder that, like, when you don't have those like backslapping relationships that you form through passing bills or getting shit through committee, it probably does raise concerns about you in those dynamics, right? That like, well, okay, what does this guy actually deliver for us? And let's face it, like, the Ohio State stuff might be a liability.
Yeah, I mean, I'm shocked that isn't more of one, because I mean,
it should be one. It definitely should be one.
Yeah, 100%. Like it does seem to be like kind of one, just not one that you would, that people, it seems under discussed.
I mean, yeah, and then especially if you consider that like Matt Gaetz is in that caucus and is probably equivalent with his level of depravity.
Right.
it might not be brought up at all, but it's just it is surprising that even in the Republican cohort, you would think that there would be 5 to 10 Eldritch monstrosities ready to take the gavel, and there actually aren't.
Yeah.
Let's get into our next debacle.
It kind of going full circle.
Right. So to the pervading, you know, discussion about events in Israel and Palestine, Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib made probably among the most fair and adequately biting statements to come out of like the
I've got it right here if you want me to read it off.
Yeah, if you got that handy.
Yeah, so Tlaib's statement on ongoing violence in Israel and Palestine. Quote, I grieve the Palestinian and Israeli lives lost yesterday, today, and every day. I am determined as ever to fight for a just future where everyone can live in peace, without fear, and with true freedom, equal rights, and human dignity. The path to that future must include lifting the blockade, ending the occupation, and dismantling the apartheid system that creates the suffocating, dehumanizing conditions that can lead to resistance. The failure to recognize the violent reality of living under siege, occupation, and apartheid make no one safer. No one, no person, no child anywhere should have to suffer or live in fear of violence. We cannot ignore the humanity in each other as long as our country provides billions in unconditional funding to support the apartheid government. This heartbreaking silent cycle of violence will continue.
So again, I think any sane observer, even if not well informed on current affairs, would see that as a very even-handed and I would reckon, you know, like earnestly compassionate statement coming out.
I mean, it's close to home for her, right? She's the only Palestinian member of Congress.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's like, the response like from that people have had to this with like her being presented with death threats to like another ghoul, Brian Mast from the Republican Party, puts on an IDF uniform in response.
Yeah.
It just begs the question, it's like, what did you want her to say? What did you think she was gonna say?
Well, and then like, you know, she's been accosted by like journalists for like they want like her statement on you know, like, oh well, like, you know, this is happening there, like, you know, like the decapitated babies, which seems to be, you know, I don't want to like just completely dismiss it as like, oh, fake news or whatever, but it seems to be like that was probably not the most accurate.
Well, it's kind of like reporting. Again, not like this theme of it's like post 9/11 coverage, right? I mean, it's like, yeah. Remember in the early stages of the Gulf War, there was that fake testimony from someone named Naira. And she talked about, you know, Iraqi soldiers killing Kuwaiti children in incubators. And then that story was revealed to be a hoax. And that the person delivering the testimony was someone tied to the Bush family through business, or someone who was, you know, brought very conveniently. Like, they were not an innocent observer. They were like the daughter of somebody influential who was like brought on for the role, right? And it's the kind of thing where it's like a violent event happens, us observing in the US with no context, ability to understand the local language, or in the overwhelming majority of cases, no background context of current events or history in the area of the event, decide that we're invested in this. And we are served up a 3-course tasting menu of atrocities. And I again, like, in addition to like the decapitated kids comments, there's also there was like an aggressive like 20-hour campaign of like Palestinians are raping Israeli women.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't want that to happen. Nobody mm-hmm. wants that to happen. But why is there a 20-hour ad campaign going about this? Right. Is it, someone's going to be mad at me for asking that, but it just like, I think it's worth like just mentioning that's like, why is everyone on Twitter so sure this happened? And you look at all the people posting in it about it are from the United States, have not been to this area, know nothing from this area, aren't even in the same time zone. So where are you getting this information from? Similar things were going on in Russia and Ukraine. And I also found it explicitly more egregious there because these are American observers with no knowledge of Russian or Ukrainian language. All of this footage is grainy. It's hard to make any of this out. So how am I, as a lay observer with no knowledge of political events, and in this case specifically wartime events, supposed to take any of this in its rightful context? You know?
Yeah, and I think too, like it was I think a focus on something that I think you know, it's like, yeah, like, I mean, I don't necessarily know if the context of, you know, how babies are killed is super important, right? Like, I mean, like, the fact that they're killed at all is barbaric and horrible. Like, I don't, like, the individual details aren't.
No one's condoning it, but, like, why is that, like, the gut, Americans, you need to know this is happening right now type of coverage?
Yeah, and I think just the fact that, like, again, it's like, yes, she's Palestinian, like, that doesn't mean she needs to have a response, like, does it? And I think that's been like the problem here, right? Is it's just sort of like her treatment has been particularly barbaric in the way like she's been treated. I think Cori Bush has been the other one that's been predominantly a negative effect as well. By this, I'm sure Ilhan Omar, though, I mean, that's just kind of, you know, the nature of her position as well, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, so, like, that's, you know, one of the things she's, like, faced. And again, like, the idea of, like, someone dressing in an IDF uniform, dressing in any military uniform, right, is kind of, you know, bizarre in that position. Yeah. But, like, I think in that context, it's kind of messed up. Like, that guy, he's not Jewish. He did serve in the IDF, which,
you know, as a volunteer, crazy.
Yeah, like, as a volunteer, and like, you know, considering the time he was in it, right? You know, like, it wasn't like he was exactly aiding within, you know, in, you know, the context of combat or anything like that. So,
oh, he's make from it Grand that Rapids. Way you will.
Oh, he is, man.
Yeah,
what an L.
Yeah, no, and I mean, this guy's like, again, just veteran of Operation Enduring Freedom, U.S. explosive ordnance technician in Afghanistan, and then also puts on the IDF uniform. I mean, the message is very clear with what that is. The message is, you know, because in Tlaib's statement, it was even-handed, but because it made... Even though mild, it was an explicit reference to apartheid, and it made an explicit reference to U.S. like complicity. That mm-hmm. was the sin. That was the step too far.
Yeah,
and that's where she needs to be beaten back into place. And that's, I mean, it's intimidation is what it is. It's the same thing as like when Ilhan Omar said it's about the Benjamins, baby. It's the same thing.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I get that, like, at least the, you know, the Benjamins comment, like, okay, like, I can at least see the connection, sort of, that you can make. Like, I mean, I get the, you know, the stereotype, but, like, it's, you know, I think you look at, you know,
I mean, here it's AIPAC even...
and whatnot. Like, it's, you know, that there's a reason why, you know, we're in, like, such lockstep support of what's going on in Israel as a country, right? Like, there's, you know... There's a reason why it's difficult to meaningfully, you know, aid, you know, Palestinians, or at least try to, you know, bring an end to, you know, the apartheid aspects of this. And it's because of, you know, the Benjamins that are sort of, you know, like the just the money that's being funneled through those lobbyist organizations.
Right. It's, again, there's a whole nexus of political patronage, of arms sales, of, you know, just corporate stability dealing and wheeling, right? That must have its stability rendered sacrosanct. It cannot be critiqued. It cannot be observed. Mm-hmm. It cannot be called into question. And that's why, like, so many of our elected representatives are doing this two-sidesism. And even why, I mean, on top of that, like, it's already complex enough. Like, I'm sure, you know, people could reasonably look at what we've talked about today and say, like, didn't you guys two-side some of this? It's hard to talk about this. But to top it off, like, the intimidation factor also plays a major role into this. And it's like, what, I mean, there's states in this country where mentioning BDS could lose you your job. In some states, people have to, like, I mean, like, okay, you're a public school teacher in Texas. Why do you have to take an oath to protect the state of Israel?
Right, yeah.
There's a whole host of things like that. I mean, BDS, which is, again, it's like, it's voting with your dollar. It's not even like anything radical, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just promulgating the idea is enough to expel students and get people shut down, right? So yeah. it's like, whether it's the death threats on Rashida Tlaib or like the guy like jumping into his IDF uniform, the message is clear. Sit down and shut up. That is the message to anybody. And let's, like, again, like, for us on the American left, like, the position is duly fraught because foreign policy remains one of the most non-transparent and unaccountable mechanisms of our government. I think a lot of people are justifiably invested in it, but there is this, like, overwhelming sense of hopelessness and desperation when people enter some of this, because what are you supposed to do? Write your congressman?
Yeah.
You know, like, there's no manager to complain to.
The thing is, it's like, in this case, right, like, for them, like, write your congressman, it's very specific in how they want you to write your congressman, right? It's you know, it's like, you know, write them to, you know, write against, you know, Rashida Tlaib to, you know, tell her that she's this, you know, jihadist, you know, lunatic who, you know, shouldn't be in Congress. She should be expelled from Congress, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, it's not, you know, it's not in a way that, like, is like, oh, hey, like, write your congressman so, like, you know, do something good in the world or anything like that. You know, God forbid.
Right. And it's, I don't know. Metro Detroit DSA had a statement on this. Actually, we're gonna have to bring Sri Tandar into this later, so we'll probably bring this part.
This could be the bridge to do it.
This could be the bridge.
So, like, we can. I guess, you know, a little bit of background on the Sri thing, then, right? Like, so he. What was the initial statement from DSA that brought him to denounce them?
Okay, so and by the way, the initial statement from DSA was pretty, like, middle ground. I would not say that it was controversial. And
for those who don't know Sri Fanerar, he is a recently elected member from Michigan, former candidate for governor. I think we probably discussed him during that run there. He ran as kind of like this faux progressive. I don't know if he really thought he had a shot, but like it probably negatively impacted what was his name? The other candidate who actually was progressive, Abdul El Sayed.
Yes.
It probably negatively affected his campaign. I don't necessarily know that either of them would have been able to win, regardless, but
Whitmer had an overwhelming lead.
Yeah. But, I mean, he kind of got a lot of attention for, like, these just really cringe and horrible campaign ads as well. There's one where you can get into this.
Well, yeah, so we'll get into Sri in a bit, because there's also a lot to unpack with him, and a lot of it is fortunately funny, so we can cap this off with some levity. But you know, the inciting incident in all of this is DSA's statement on October 7th. DSA is steadfast in expressing our solidarity with Palestine. Today's events are a direct result of Israel's apartheid regime, a regime that receives billions in funding from the United States, and the violence and the occupation. Free Palestine, part one. They follow it up with, "We unequivocally condemn the killing of all civilians. It's imperative for international human rights law to be respected, but we cannot forget that the Israeli state has systematically denied Palestinians the right to self-determination for decades. This was not unprovoked. For over 60 years, Palestinians have faced ethnic cleansing, torture, bombings, and housing demolitions. Gaza is still under a blockade. As socialists, we must act." They are promoting their hashtag Not On Our Dime coalition campaign and are encouraging people to, you know, go out to this to join peaceful protests. Okay. Very simple statement. I would argue that this is probably one of the most even-handed statements people have made on this, right? And this was a bridge too far for some people, as we'll see. So one Shri Tanadar. Was it his personal or his official one? Let's see who said it.
This isn't his first one that he had sent, but like there was one later where I think it was posted actually in the Discord, was the first one.
Yes, let's go to the Discord. Yeah, let's check. I think it was in News and Politics Discussion.
Yeah, he just posted, "I renounce my membership to the DSA. He makes a statement. "Today, I'm officially renouncing my membership in the Democratic Socialists of America. After the brutal terrorist attack in Israel, which included the indiscriminate murder, rape, and kidnapping of innocent men, women, and children, I can no longer associate with an organization unwilling to call out terrorism in all its forms," which is ironic, considering what the statement says. "Sunday's hate-filled and anti-Semitic rally in New York City, promoted by the NYC DSA, makes it impossible for me to continue my affiliation. I stand with Israel and its right to defend itself. There is no place for moral equivocation in the face of unadulterated evil, as we have seen from Hamas. I will continue to work towards goals that brought me in Congress in the first place: universal health care, workers' rights, strong labor unions, equity for communities of color, environmental justice, and compassionate immigration. My ideals have not changed at all. I strongly believe that ending my association with DSA serves my constituents' interests, as they expect me to represent them by helping to build a better, more just world, not just fanning the flames of hatred."
Now, this has prompted some very interesting responses. So for starters, Rashida Tlaib comes right back with, "While he is busy posting memes, his residents are calling my office for assistance because he's absent from doing his job," Tlaib said in a statement. "He isn't putting in the work of a public servant and is leaving his working class communities across his district with no real advocate." Tanadar objected to the characterization, saying his office has solved hundreds of constituent cases and response to requests within 24 to 48 hours. Now, this also gets interesting because this ends up triggering a response from Shri's former communications director.
Yes.
So let's get into this one because this got fun.
So
during my first few days working for him, I knew I was in for an interesting ride. In my first meeting with Shri and another staffer, he said, "I don't care about policies or legislation right now. I just need you to focus on my reelection." I always reminded him that congressional work and campaign work needed to be separate, but he didn't care.
I just want to point out real quick, this is hilarious because this is, when I teach Congress, this is precisely what we talk about, is that members care about their reelection. They don't care about other things necessarily. So like here we have, that's their first priority, and here's a member openly stating exactly that this is what he's here for, this is what he cares about. So very ironic, just hearing it straight from the horse's mouth.
Exactly.
And Shri Tanadar, of all people.
He would ask me every week to send official office e-newsletters to his email, his campaign email list. And when I would tell him we couldn't do that, he would threaten to fire me and remind me that it's his office. Now let's talk about how he had a hard time retaining staff. At one point, six people quit from his office within 2 weeks, including an intern. When I quit from his office, he had five people on staff. For context, Congresswoman Dingell has 16. I once attended an event with him in Detroit. When we were walking up to the church and he saw a group of black men outside, he looked at me and said, "Will you take a bullet for me?" I looked at him and said, "Absolutely not." He was pissed. He had a hard time trusting black women. When he would hire black women to deputy positions and they were more than well qualified to be director or chief of staff, he wouldn't promote them and would prefer and keep those positions open until he found a man, preferably white. Shree would always ask me to follow what Rashida and AOC were doing so he can be popular like them and gain followers. He once called me past midnight to ask why AOC had 10 million followers and he only had 3,000. When he visited the southern border in April, remember that? He called me on his way there and started telling me Republican talking points. When I made him aware of that, he said, "Just tell me what the Democrats would like to hear." There's so much I can say, but what's important to know is Shree is all about himself. He's the most ignorant, self-centered, and uninformed human being I've ever worked with. And if you're wondering, yes, his hair is fake. And he killed the monkeys and the beagles.
Damn. Never had a shot.
So this is another thing that just came up in the comments. Funniest thing in the world about Shree, his career before entering politics in 2018, he owned a company called Avamine. They're based out of Ann Arbor, just so you know. Their main output was over-the-counter gas station erectile dysfunction pills that gave people heart problems.
Nice. I mean, they already have enough problems, but...
it's... to make it matters even more interesting, right? Metro Detroit DSA now has an interesting clapback because Tanadar makes a big show of quitting DSA. He got all these fucking people like supporting him for his brave stance. Now let's hear what the local chapter had to say about this. Detroit DSA stands with our member, Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib. We denounce Congressman Shree Tanadar's statements against Rashida Tlaib and any efforts by Democrats and Republicans to censure Rashida, the only Palestinian woman in Detroit or in Congress. Detroit DSA chose not to endorse Shree Tanadar when he first ran for Congress. He was recently expelled from our organization. Tanadar's views are not and have never been representative of Detroit DSA. His sensationalist statement renouncing a membership he is not entitled to is a selfish distraction from unfolding in the region. A selfish distraction from the tragedy unfolding in the region. So I'm not going to read the rest of the statement. You can look it up. But this is one of those funny things where you can gain paper membership in an organization because you can afford to pay lifetime dues from your status as a millionaire, and then make never show up to anything except like a couple potlucks, and then make a big show of needing to break with DSA months after you've already been censured and dismissed.
Right. Yeah.
What I really find funny is like,
what got him censured?
Well, the fact that he was always inconsistent on policy.
Sure.
You know, this guy's been like, and the fact that Michigan political observers have known this guy to be a fraud for quite some time.
Yeah, I was talking with one of my colleagues who used to be involved pretty heavily with state politics. He was a state legislative staffer and is still like kind of, you know, it's like an observer now. He was telling me that like basically like Tanadar is like kind of just like this well-known like political tourist, like just like that's all he is like, you know, just a tourist, in other words, someone who's not really interested in participating in like the political process for any good reason. They're just there to kind of, you know, see the sights and sounds, get the popularity, things like that. And, you know, I mean, as that staffer pointed out, right, if he's like concerned about like, oh, well, like, you know, what are like Rashida and AOC doing because they've got followers, like, and you know, like we kind of knew when he ran for office
back in 2018, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah. For the governorship, like we kind of knew that he was like, you know, this sort of faux progressive. And it, like, it makes sense, right? Considering like what was in vogue at the time, that he saw those people's like being like, you know, sort of this, you know, these lightning rods for attention. And he wanted a piece of that.
And I remember that period very vividly, actually, where, you know, Whitmer was the front runner for the race, but yep. You had Abdul El Sayed, who I think now is a CNN contributor, and Sri Tanadar taking like the competing for the progressive lane. But, you know, Abdul El Sayed comes off as like this, you know, Bernie wing, very much in that like the Bernie Sanders style of politics, right? Crowdfunded, earnest, and straight to the point. And can kind of back up everything he says, whereas Tanadar has probably one of the most obviously astroturfed political presences I'd seen. I can speak to this because I saw this guy in person at the Michigan Democratic Convention in Detroit in 2018. And this guy had an entourage of like paid staff who was switching costumes every time he needed to go somewhere. I'd seen the same guy in a suit jacket in like like a supporter's outfit and t-shirt, and then like, you know, switching up roles based on whatever room they needed to go to. And Shree's like ability to speak was incredibly weak. What he was preying upon was two really disgusting things. One is he was trying to prey on people with low media literacy and like low information in voting in general.
Mm-hmm.
So just like saying he's a progressive without ever disclosing what that means.
Sure.
And he got a lot of people that way. But the thing is it's very easy to check people on that. And if someone was stupid enough to buy it, well, there was no hope. But then the second thing he was banking on, and this is something that came up in closed door conversations that I had the displeasure of hearing. I had heard a local Democratic elected say out loud, why would Abdul even run? He knows he's not going to win with a name like that, which is the same claim people made about Obama.
Right.
So there's already, but like, it's just like the Islamophobia is still alive and well in some circles, even allegedly progressive ones. And he was, I don't think he explicitly played on it, but he was counting on being able to lean into, hey, I'm not Muslim.
Well, and he had like these weird ads that were kind of like, oh, his name's like hard to pronounce. Like you had the one where it's like, there's like someone's like Darth Vader as like their mispronunciation of his name in an ad that he put out. And it was just so weird. And like, I don't think I've ever seen like a more cringy politician. Not that like, I mean, that's like the least of his problems, but yeah, it's just a really weird case. And like, I believe there was reports at the time too, that he had like considered running as like a Republican before.
Yes, a bunch of reports came out where basically like,
yeah,
he had been disclosed as a Republican donor, that he had expressed interest as running as a Republican, that his wave of progressive like rhetoric was just a costume, and that, you know, there were a bunch of scandals about his company doing tests on animals. So there was a big scandal about him basically being a dog and monkey killer at his pharmaceuticals company. And just in general,
maybe like, for the Neuralink episode.
Exactly. So it's like this guy, like, you know, to any lay observer or anyone who like is willing to read past a paragraph is an obvious phony, but he seemed to get far enough. And the thing is the only equivalent I have to this at a national level was Bloomberg, except in Bloomberg's case, you know, Bloomberg was explicitly appealing to people who are afraid of the S word, socialism.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I had a very paranoid discussion with another person of like, was Tanidar put into the race to spoil things for El Sayed? Who's to say? What I will say is that I doubt that, because he's not exactly buddy-buddy with everybody in the Michigan Democratic Party. He's not even a fixture there. You'd think he'd get rewarded for something in that case. He didn't. What he did do after he lost the primary is post a cryptic picture of him in a Detroit hat somewhere in downtown Detroit saying, "I'll be back here soon enough." And that's where he pulls out his congressional run.
Yeah. And it's a shame, because it's like, it's a safe seat. So like there's, it's really wasted on him. Right. And like, we only have like, you know, it's, you know, it's kind of the closest thing we have to a majority minority district. It technically doesn't meet the threshold, like properly to be one, but it's the closest thing we have. And you would think that like, you know, like, I mean, usually those are sort of done like, well, like it's majority black, you'll probably have a black representative. And, that's not the case. And like, I mean, whether or not that's necessary or not, I don't necessarily know. But like, I mean, anyone would be better than him.
Right.
In that seat, right. Someone who's just kind of like so vacuous and disingenuous. Like, you know, regardless of his own intentions to.
And has such contempt for 14th, his district.
13th. Yeah, exactly.
Like, again, to say that about, like, a group of black men, like, would you take a bullet for me? And then...
Right, it was just the first time. Like, I mean, imagine, like, just, like, asking anyone, would you take a bullet for me? Like, unironically, right? Like, not like, you know, hey, like, who's going to bite the bullet and, you know, do this, you know, unsavory task? It's like, no, like, I'm afraid I might actually die here because I, you know, I saw some black folks. Like, just insane.
And I'm looking at this district too. Like, it is actually like a pretty working class district. Like, it is mostly City of Detroit, Highland Park, Hamtramck, Taylor, Romulus, Wayne, and then what, the richest area is Grosse Pointe, which, you know, that's like that's the odd man out in that district.
Yeah.
Let me just take a look at this, because that disappointed me. Who did he win against?
I think he ran against like a real person too. Like, it wasn't like,
oh, his first wife killed himself. That's interesting.
Oh, well,
definitely no foul play there.
I mean, compare this bio, right, to
yeah, let's see.
Oh, it looks like defeating Aunt Adam Hollier. But compare this bio to George Santos's, right? It's under the elections.
Yeah. So it seemed like it was between him and a state senator, director of the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency, and was appointed by Whitmer.
Yeah, that would have been after that race.
Yeah, has written two autobiographies. This is Shree's Wish in 2004. Self-published his memoirs in English, The Blue Suitcase. There's also this weird like local documentary of him like getting interviewed by some Ann Arbor area like news station, and they just like tour his like massive mansion in Washtenaw County somewhere.
So like a low effort production of Cribs,
basically. Yeah. And it's like this guy just has like this massive house. He doesn't know what he's doing with it. He's just like robotically empty. It fills it up with like really ghost shit. Like, I don't know. The thing that gets me about Shree Tanidar, one is that the last name is indicative of certain things. Tanidar in a lot of Indian dialects translates to prison guard or jailkeeper.
Oh.
Just so you know. But specifically, like, with him, it's like he gets to really, like, come up in the United States, become like a, like, you know, really like throw off his like working class identity as an Indian immigrant, cast it up to be part of like the American elite, becomes a millionaire, becomes a political tourist. And it's kind of like he is like the living case study of Vijay Prashad's book, Uncle Swami, which was a case study on like the Indian diaspora in the United States.
Mm.
And that book is
before.
Yeah, it's a good read and it's a very short one, but in that book he kind of gets into how Indian Americans, particularly Hindus, modeled their political involvement around groups like the Israel lobby, specifically AIPAC in particular, right? Mm. And Tanidar like is indicative of many theses in the book. In one part of the book, Vijay Prashad says that Indian Americans are this unique political demographic because as a consequence of their immigration to the United States in the time period that they did, they didn't directly participate, except for small exceptions, in Indian independence movements, nor did they participate in the civil rights movement in the United States, but received benefits from both. So you received burgeoning national identity from your successful independence movements, and you receive the gains of civil rights wins that Black Americans fought for you, you know? And it, like the Indian American diaspora is, it's not a monolith per se, but I would reckon that there are several reactionary elements within it. And whether it's like, you know, India partnering up with Israel, as we've seen on the international stage, to very rich Hindus in America becoming like a silent block for Trump and the Republican base, or whether it's Sri Tanidar happily walking along as a political tourist, I think Vijay Prashad's book holds up very well, and I think Sri Tanidar is the case study of that book.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've successfully made that case. He's a political tourist, kind of an idiot in a lot of ways, too.
Saved by his wealth, really.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, kind of, you know, too stupid to serve, but just kind of saved by his own wealth and whatnot. And I think it's unfortunate kind of seeing, you know, his role in this. I mean, I'm very glad that the DSA, like, you know, took that stance against him. I mean, there was one statement he made later where he was like, you know, I denounced DSA and Hamas, like, literally in the same sentence, right? Like essentially equivocating the two, which is, you know, beyond insane. But probably, you know, undoubtedly what he actually, you know, believes, because he's, you know.
And I doubt that, like, this move is really going to win him any traction in his district.
Oh, yeah.
I really don't think it's going to go anywhere for him. This was more of, like, a signal to money.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, as much as, like, it kind of is, like, you know, Israel-Palestine occupies, like, the certain place in the cultural sphere, I really do wonder, you know, how much, like, average Americans actually think about it.
That is the question, and I think that's where pollsters need to make better efforts. That's where all the various competing political bodies and institutions should try to direct their efforts, right? Is like, okay, we have a cohort of internet-addled political observers who are incessantly like putting their takes out. I'm pointing the finger at me here. But we don't what is the position on the ground? What do people know? What do people think?
Yeah.
I assume people know and think very little of these things. And that is probably by design.
Yeah, that's probably generally my assumption, too.
Great minds think alike. Fools seldom differ. What's new?
Yeah.
Also, Tanidar, escorted Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi, whose prime ministership they already called systemically oppressive on a state. Yeah. Yeah, Tanidar is really just like a two-faced kind of guy, just with how he's tried to astroturf, but also how he's tried to play both sides, and then to tell your comms director, okay, what do the Democrats want me to say?
Like, that's just crazy, where it's just like you have so little like principles that like you can't, like, you have nothing to offer.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's, oh yeah, and then to the earlier thing too, yeah. He made a $2,300 donation to the Republican presidential campaign of John McCain.
Man, like the one election where like that's like as embarrassing as it can possibly be.
Yeah, as his campaign gained public traction in 2018, reporters at The Intercept and HuffPost. But how are you getting exposed by HuffPost? This is bad.
And what I said, like the one election where, like, even Trump said, like, McCain couldn't get elected dog catcher and whatnot. And, like, you're out there like, oh, man, I really just got to stop this black guy from getting into office. Like, that's just, jeez.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I think I'm going to call this one Shree's Gambit. I think that's perfect. Yep.
It's just funny where it's like, I mean, I think, like, and we've known a lot of this stuff about him for a long time, but we've kind of just saw him as like just like this kind of like inoffensive buffoon in a lot of ways, where we'd always like there wasn't there like something where did you see it in person where he was like literally like on street corners with like his campaign signs and stuff like that?
I saw the photos of that, and
okay,
that,
yeah, I couldn't remember if it was in person or if it was just the photos, but yeah, like it's like just such a weird character, and
yeah,
like
he's a cartoonish like figure all entirely.
Yeah, and it's like that stuff's like, you know, more innocent in the sense that, like, you know, like who cares one way or the other on that, but like yeah, like when you start seeing him kind of like, you know, make, you know, like bigger statements and stuff like that, you're just kind of like, man, like just screw this guy.
Yeah, I mean that's I could say worse, but that's adequate. Fuck that guy. All right, well, that's everything I got on the outline. I know this has been like some very tough discussion, dear listener. I feel like it's good we got this out. I feel like we were pretty even-handed, but, you know, as always, we encourage discussion and comments in whatever forums are available. Any suggestions, you know where to find us. It's all on Linktree. Josh, is there any other closing thoughts or anything else you want us to consider as we close out?
You know, I think that's about it for today.
Yeah. Well, as mentioned earlier, you can find everywhere we are on the internet on the Linktree. And yeah, I don't know. My heart goes out to Palestine. I don't know what else to say, but we're all trying to figure out what to do. And once we find out what that is, I'll see you there. Till next time, dear listener, take care.